Monty Irvin was inducted in the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1973. The outfielder was a key part of the New York Giants winning two pennants in eight seasons, including a World Series. Monty, who was born in Alabama, eventually became a four-sport star in Orange, New Jersey, and started his career in the Negro Leagues at the early age of 17. He excelled with the Newark Eagles and dominated the Negro Leagues for 10 seasons, and if it weren't for certain circumstances, could have been the player to break the color barrier instead of Jackie Robinson. Jimmy Heath, a true jazz treasure, recognized not only for his wonderful work on the saxophone, but his magnificent composing and arranging. Jimmy is the middle brother of the legendary Heath brothers and has performed with all the jazz greats, including John Coltrane, Miles Davis, and Dizzy Gillespie. Joining us from his home in Houston, Texas, is Monty Irvin, and joining us from his home in Queens, New York, Jimmy Heath. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
It's my pleasure.
And also my pleasure.
Now, we've heard so many times on this program about how the worlds of sports and music collide and thrive. So let's go back to the days of the Negro Leagues, if we can. Do you think there was some sort of artistic, spiritual affinity between baseball and jazz? How about you first, Monty?
Well, in my situation, I think it was, we came along during the golden era of music. I think from about 1930 to 1970 was a wonderful era for music, particularly jazz singers, saxophonists, and so on. And many of us used to go to see all the named persons, the people who was making it famous. I'm talking about Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and all the rest. It's a wonderful era, and I get a thrill now when I think about it.
Jimmy, what do you see as the connection between baseball and jazz? Why has it been so intertwined?
Well, I think the jazz musicians and the athletes, including the baseball players most specifically, were looked upon in the community as leaders by the people because they were outstanding in what they did. And, you know, we all, we would get dressed in suits and ties. And people in the communities would look upon us, either we were on the stage performing, we all had uniforms and we looked very dignified. And this was a aspiration for most people in the community because they thought we were making a lot of money, which we were making just a little bit more than the average person. But also, in the baseball players or the athletes, they were very special to us because they had forged ahead in the community and were very talented in what they did. And they all had uniforms. And they all, when they went out, they dressed in ties and suits and were very dignified people. And this was an aspiration of some of the community people. So that's why I think they looked up to us.
You agree with that, Monty?
I certainly do. I think, however, that we as athletes looked on the musicians as something special, and we really admired their expertise, how good they were, how wonderful they sounded, and whenever they would come close, we would always try to make sure that we got to see them.
Well, Monty, don't you think we both were expert in what we were doing? The reason we were attracted because the musicians were also attracted to the athletes and the baseball players. I know I was. Once we got into, as African Americans, once we got to visibility. But I did happen to, my uncle took me in Wilmington, North Carolina, where I was going to high school. I was born in Philadelphia, but when my father was in kind of hard times, my grandfather in Wilmington had a grocery store, and he was a businessman. So me and my older brother, we went to Wilmington to go to school. So my uncle took me to see the Indianapolis Clowns. So I did see one of the teams in the Negro League.
Another connection we had was when we travel around, many times they would be checking out of a hotel, getting ready to go on the road, and we'd be checking in because we might have a two or three game series in the town. So we got a chance to visit with them that way, you understand? We spent the short time of day with them, talking to them, telling them how much we admired them and so on. And another great fan was Ella Fitzgerald. She really liked baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. So I got to know her very well.
Well, I knew her also, and Billy Eckstein was a good friend of mine, too. But the thing is, we were staying in the same places, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
In those hotels. Mm-hmm. And usually earlier in our careers, they were black hotels.
That's right.
See? So we had a social connection and an artistic connection.
That's right.
This is a special edition of Sports Jam as we're joined by Baseball Hall of Famer Monty Irvin and jazz composer, arranger, and saxophonist Jimmy Heath. Now, you guys mentioned about staying in the hotels, and at times they were black hotels. Can you take us through what it was like to go through segregation and go through racism during your careers and how that shaped you as people?
Well, it was of necessity that we did this because, the other hotels would not accommodate us. And, of course, we had to patronize the hotels in which we stayed. For instance, in Birmingham, Alabama, I remember we checked in one, we were just coming in, and one of the big bands was just leaving, you understand? So the reason why we met was because we had to meet because that's the only place we could stay. And that happened, of course, not only in Birmingham, Alabama, but all over the country at that time. So that was a common bond where we know what the situation was, and we wanted to be comfortable, and so we patronized the Negro hotels.
Well, it also was a positive in some ways because black people own businesses.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. You had
hotels
to
hotels that.
Yeah, you had to patronize your own, of course, and that was a good thing. That was a good thing.
It was it was a two-edged sword, like. We couldn't get in the real luxury hotels. And then when eventually, there were times when they would put us right by the elevator or something, get in a white hotel, and they put you right where the noisy part and all of that. But eventually we were able to come out of that. But I went to school in Wilmington. That's where I experienced most of my segregation in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I remember going from Philadelphia on the train. When you got to Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, you had to get out of the integrated coach and get in the black coach. There was one coach for black people to go on down to Wilmington.
Yeah, that was almost universal at that time.
Those were indignities that we had to suffer. The other one with me was not going to school in Philadelphia. I went to about the sixth grade in Philadelphia. And then when I went to Wilmington in the winter to go to school there, I found out even much later that the white high school went to the 12th grade, and the black high school that me and Coltrane, at the Coltrane was in Hamlet, North Carolina. I was in Wilmington. We both the same age. We both graduated in 1943 from high school, and that was from the 11th grade. The white school, and that was a state law of North Carolina. Now, we never had any higher forms of math.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that that no longer exists, and that, you know, a lot of progress has been made. And of course, you know, that was a very painful period, but I'm so happy that it's over, and now the playing field is more level.
Jimmy, sometimes it's hard for us to even contemplate that it was difficult for musicians like yourself and many of the greats that you've played with, that there were places they weren't welcome.
Oh, I experienced that. I experienced playing in Iowa and other places where we had to play, or Wichita, Kansas, or somewhere, where we had to play two or three different audiences, play for the white audience, then play for the black audience, and that kind of thing. So I experienced the prejudice. But now I'm just want to move on, and I just want the African-American youth to realize how the struggle that we went through to make open the doors for them, and they won't step in. That's my answer to all that.
We're speaking with Jimmy Heath and Monty Irvin on Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. How about the most magical moments for both of you when it comes to being on the field, on the stage, or when it comes to dealing with the opposite? What was something that you remember most about baseball, or something that, Monty, you might remember most about jazz? What are the magical moments that you guys can share with us, both in your careers and thinking about the other person's career?
I used to, when I was coming along, I finally got a chance to hear Lester Young, the president, play the tenor saxophone. I thought, you know, he was so cool, and I thought he was so wonderful. So I became a tenor sax fanatic, and I used to find wherever he was playing, I used to always go to see him play. I used to go to Carnegie Hall when they give the concerts. And then, of course, earlier, there was a great band called, I'm trying to think of his name, it'll come to me in a minute. He had this wonderful, wonderful band. He's a graduate of Fisk University.
Jimmy Lunsford.
Jimmy Lunsford. He's the one I'm trying to think of, yeah. So they asked me, you know, I was in the hospital for a while, so when I got out, they wanted to raise some money so I could pay the hospital bill. And they asked me who I wanted to engage, and I told them there's only one, and that was Jimmy Lunsford, who had just the most beautiful sound that I had ever heard. So they got him, and they gave this terrific performance there in Orange, New Jersey, and I remember the price of admission was $2, and I think the entire band only cost $500. Now, this is way back in 1938. In 1938, I think if you were to try to engage those guys today, it would be, instead of $500, it'd probably be $50,000. But what a great time we had! And then, of course, Sarah Vaughan, who grew up in Newark, and I was only about 10 or 15 minutes from Newark. I saw her make her first, her debut, March 9th in 1943 at the Proctor Theater in Newark, New Jersey. She was sang in the choir, and then Billy Eckstein heard about her and saw her, and then that was her first performance. And my buddy and I, we went to see her. So later on, I used to tell her about it. She said, well, since you saw me and had to pay to see my first performance, she said, that will be the last one. Whenever I'm in town, you just call me and from now on, you'll get in for free. And I took her up on that a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm still watching baseball. So I loved it when Willie Mays and you, Monty, and people were playing Campanella,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't mention, and Luke Easter and
Larry
all the
Doby,
people.
Yeah.
Larry Doby mm-hmm. and Elston Howard.
Minnie Minoso.
Yeah, Minnie yeah. Minoso. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm still a big baseball fan, so I can't name one specific one that I was a big Dodger fan. When they moved, that hurt me. When they moved from Brooklyn to L.A., that hurt me. But I think when the Dodgers won their first championship.
1955, yes.
Was one of the most exciting times
sure
for me in relationship to baseball. No more, not so much anymore. I used to just feature knowing all the people of color,
mm-hmm.
but that's difficult now because most of them are Latinos.
Yeah,
and you know, I still love the sport. It is my relaxation, and I really think that the baseball. See, I'm only 5'3", and I never could play anything but the saxophone. And I admire all athletes. That's what I admire. And that's still a pleasantry in my life.
Mm-hmm. And seemingly, some of that interest has waned, and a lot of the youngsters are going now into basketball and football for one reason or another. So I tell them, you know, in order to play basketball, you got to be tall and you got to be able to dribble and you got to be a pretty good shot. But you don't have to be 6'9" in order to play baseball. And mm-hmm. I say the same thing to the football player. You know, many of them now are big. You know, got linemen 300 pounds and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way you can, you know, make the team in football. In baseball, you don't have to have these dimensions. You can be 5'5", or 5'8", or 5'9", or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you can run, hit, feel, throw, you can make it. Plus, you play longer. You don't get, you know, mm-hmm. the injury factor is much less in baseball. So what baseball now is trying to do is tell the youngsters to participate in baseball. We need you.
Most of the great ball players came out of the South.
Yeah, came off the farm for the most part.
Big. So they had fields mm-hmm. to play in and hone their talent.
That's right.
Is that right, Monty?
That's true. Had wide areas. Had a lot of acreage where you can, you know, go out and run, hit, feel, and throw. And, of course, in the inner cities now, you don't have that advantage.
You have basketball courts.
Yeah,
but you don't
true.
Have a baseball
yeah.
fields.
Mm-hmm. And
that one may be one reason.
That is one reason.
How about the fact that the Latinos still come from the South America and the islands where they still have that kind of environment.
That's true. And Puerto Rico and Santo Domingo
yeah.
or Dominican
yeah,
Republic.
Yeah, so doesn't that...
Mexico and Cuba
it,
and
that's
Venezuela,
right.
yeah. They have wide areas. Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, with that saxophone in your hand, tell us what was the most memorable night of your career as a musician, if you could pick one.
Oh, the most memorable night was when I had I was about 20-something, and I had a big band in Philadelphia after being on the road with a band in Nebraska called Nat Tolls. dance band, a territorial Midwest dance band in 1945. When I went back to Philadelphia, I started a big band, and I was only 21 or something like that. And I had Coltrane, who was my same age, in the band, Benny Golson and Johnny Coles and Nelson Boyd and a lot of guys who got famous with Dizzy and others in the band. And Charlie Parker used my horn for a whole week because his was in the pawn shop. And I used to take it to him every night at a club in Philly called a Downbeat. And I'd take the horn up there, and Bird would play my horn, and I'd stay up there and listen and take it home every night. I was afraid he was going to put it back in the pawn shop. Mine, too, like his. And anyway, I asked him to play with me, with my band, for a kid in the neighborhood had gotten legs amputated by a streetcar. And Charlie Parker said yes, he would come and play with my band. That was one of the greatest nights in my life, because Max sat in on the drums and Charlie Parker played the saxophone, and there are pictures of that.
As far as on the baseball field for you, Monty, what's been the most memorable night of your life as a baseball player?
Well, I came up, late in baseball. I didn't come up to the majors until 1949. And, of course, in 1951, Willie Mays came to the team. You know, he was the perfect man to help our club win the pennant in the World Series. Well, that fall we went barnstorming, and we stopped in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Billy Eckstein was playing at one of the theaters in Charlotte, and naturally everything was segregated. The black kids could downstairs. And then the white kids had to sit upstairs, and there was no integration at all. And Billy was singing and playing so well, and so he announced. He said, "I know we're having a great time down here." He said, "If you youngsters have nerve enough to come on down and join us." And don't you know, they left from upstairs and came on down. And everybody was dancing in the aisles and singing, and so it was. That was one of the I saw the theater and music being integrated in Charlotte, North Carolina, way back in 1952. It was a wonderful, wonderful event, and one that I'll never forget.
How about winning the World Series? How much did that mean to you?
Winning the World Series was extra special. We won the pennant in 1951, but the Yankees beat us 4-2 that year. But then later on in 1954, Willie Mays was the batting champion and the most valuable player that year. And we were able to beat Cleveland 4 straights. We beat them 2 in New York. We started at the Polo Grounds in New York. Then we went to Cleveland in Municipal Stadium. We won the 2 games there. And in that game, Willie Mays made one of the greatest catches ever, and it was caught. It was one of the first games ever televised, first World Series game televised. And everybody saw him make this impossible catch to save the game. And then, of course, we went on to win it in 4 straight. It's a magnificent memory, and I'll never forget it.
You're listening to a special edition of Sports Jam, joined by jazz master, educator, and saxophonist Jimmy Heath and Baseball Hall of Famer Monty Irvin. What did community and family mean to each of you in terms of your careers? Obviously, with the Heath brothers, Jimmy, and for you, Monty, I understand your brother Cal was an outstanding athlete.
He's a better athlete than I was. He could hit, run, field, and throw, and he's a great basketball player. He's a great swimmer. He's a great tennis player. He could, great football player. He excelled in everything that he did. He didn't have the power that I did. So he said, "Well, Monty," he said, "since I don't have your power, I'm going to I want to coach and teach." So he finished the university, graduated from the University of Illinois. Then he started to teach. And then he wound up as the coach and athletic director at A&T University in Greensboro. And he served in that capacity for about 35 years. He still lives there, retired, but very well respected. And I'm going to go to see him in about a month. He's doing well, and I just wish him well.
Jimmy, I know that we spoke before we started this show that your father played the clarinet, but tell us what it was like to be in such a musical family.
Well, you know, my brother Percy, who was 3 years older than I, was a bass player with the Modern Jazz Quartet, a very famous jazz group for 40-some years. They stayed together. And my younger brother, who came along 9 years after me, is the drummer. So there were the Heath brothers. We finally got together. Anyway, I had made recordings as Jimmy Heath with both of those brothers, because Percy was away with the MJQ. When I would get him, he would record with me when I had a contract, my first contract. So, and then we started a group called the Heath Brothers later, finally got together as a family.
Maybe the word bop is a great word to describe both of you. As Dizzy Gillespie once said, if you know Jimmy Heath, you know bop. And bop, obviously the sound of the ball coming off the bat of Baseball Hall of Famer Monty Irvin as he cracked yet another home run. Monty Irvin joining us from his home in Houston, Texas. Jimmy Heath joining us from his home in Queens, New York. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Jam.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Really enjoyed it. It was wonderful.